Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's Chuck Bonneville and Julie Hayden, Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Truth Straight Up.
Brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. Coming up here, we've got Laurel Eimer here. We're going to be bringing her on to talk about something, but I also wanted to let everybody know we kind of want to do a lot to talk about regarding the Epstein case. I think a lot of different thoughts, and want to get your thoughts on that too as well, see whatever you can figure out. But let's go ahead and start with Laurel Eimer. Hey, Laurel, thank you once again for coming on the show. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you want to. And wanted to have you on because you guys have started a pack, right? And you have a big event coming on. But we also want to get your thoughts on really what even Colorado politics is calling a battle for the soul of the Republican Party in Colorado, the vice chair race. But why don't you sort of welcome and tell us about, you've got this big event coming up here in a couple of weeks.
Yep. Hi, how is it? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
We got you.
Okay, how are you guys? It's been a while.
We're good.
Yeah. I know it has been a while. We're good, thanks.
I know. So, yeah, Weston and I started a PAC, a Team Eimer PAC, and the idea is to use that to promote better candidates that are conservatively aligned with the America First movement. And not necessarily only in Colorado. We know that Colorado is, I mean, we're in dire straits, right? Like, let's just be honest, almost a lost cause if we want to be honest. But there are candidates in other states that we know that are aligned with the America First MAGA movement and President Trump's agenda. And so we want to be able to work to help those candidates if possible, and then also engage Gen Z and just get more interaction from our perspective and our belief system to push that out through the PAC. And so we're having our first real major event on Saturday, August 9th. And we are bringing in former Congressman Louis Gohmert from the 1st Congressional District in Texas. He served in the U.S. Congress from 2005 to 23 when he left to run for Attorney General. He unfortunately lost that race. But Louis Gohmert may or may not be known to everyone. If you watch the news channels, you know, Fox and some of those others, he's a frequent guest on many of our top news shows, especially where they're looking for a conservative voice. So he came out of the Tea Party movement in the early 2000s. And honestly, conservatively speaking, Louis is to the right of Matt Gaetz. So when we talk about conservatism, Louis is like, he's there. He's with us. And he's kind of not as well known. He didn't pass as many bills as some of these other guys, but that wasn't his agenda. His agenda was to go in there, shake things up, get people's attentions, speak the truth, and not serve a lifetime in Congress. So once again, that fiscal conservative perspective that comes out of the Tea Party movement, Louis embodies all of that. And we're going to have a fantastic event. And we hope that everybody can come out and join us. We're building momentum for the 2026 cycle. That's what this is beginning to push out. And hopefully we can build some momentum and get some real engagement.
Now, how would people find out about it?
I'm sorry, what'd you say, Chuck?
Where is the event going to be?
It's going to be at a private residence in Denver. That information will be released as we get closer. We do have our host committee, which is Mr. and Mrs. Mike DeManna, Mr. Adam Dorito, and Miss Charlene Carter. Charlene Carter is best known to some conservatives in our movement as being the lady who fought Southwest Airlines and won. She was a flight attendant who was fired from Southwest Airlines for religious freedom. And she fought Southwest Airlines. She won a multi-million dollar lawsuit and won her position back with Southwest Airlines. And she's a hero of Southwest Airlines. And if you go to the airport and you see a flight attendant and you say, hey, do you know Charlene? They're like, oh, she's a hero. You know, we love her. And so that makes up our host committee. We do have additional spots if anyone is interested in being on the host committee. And tickets for the event start at $150 and go up from there. We do have VIP options as well. You can get information at teamimer.com. That's TEAMIMER.com, teamimerpack.com. You can get information. You can always reach out to Weston or I anytime for more information.
And when is it going to be held?
It's Saturday, August 9th at 5 p.m.
Okay. Well, and I'm glad you guys are doing that. And I kind of want to switch over a little, and we'll give you a chance to promote it one more time too, just in case people are going like, what? But, you know, you said something that Chuck says all the time, and people like say, no. It's like, you know, Colorado, really, if we're being honest, maybe a lost cause, dire straits. And I think it is important. You can't, it's sort of like AA, you can't cure the problem until you acknowledge it, right? And that doesn't mean you give up. It doesn't mean, you know, Rev had a big golf tournament in San Diego, and the weather was gorgeous. Rev is like, why don't we live in San Diego? But I said, here's why we don't live in San Diego. We went into every restaurant we went into, there was a 10% fee they were charging because of the minimum height thing. You would walk into a gas station and it said, breathing automobile fumes might be dangerous. I mean, it's just ridiculous, right? It's just, I'm like, this is why we don't live in California. We need to stop it here in Colorado. Is there any hope, do you think, or where is the hope? Maybe let me put it that way. Where is the hope?
Well, I do think there's hope, but I don't think that we're looking in the right direction for the hope. I think that unfortunately, and I've been saying this for a long time, and so some people don't like what I say, but I speak the truth and how I believe that when we promote congressional candidates, U.S. Senate candidates from Colorado, that's not where we're going to make our difference. We're going to make our difference locally and in the smallest capacity possible. We need to build a bench from there. We need to look at running in boards and commissions in your local communities, in your county, water boards, school boards. We know school boards are really, really difficult. But if you can get into your community level on some of those boards and commissions like historical board or parks and recreation, I mean, they have them for all kinds of things. And if you can get in there and start to build a base and start to build your name, build a following, then you can move from there. That's what the Democrats do. That's what their blueprint was that they have got, and they have specific programs specifically for women to do just that,
right?
To infiltrate these small boards and commissions and then move up the ladder from there. And so I think we as Republicans should take the same approach, and we should reach out locally to everyone in our local communities and say, hey, you know, I mean, right now I think there's 300 possible openings or positions in Jefferson County alone, where some of these are terms limited this year in 25 and 26 openings for boards and commissions in Jeffco. I think every conservative in Jeffco should be applying to be on these boards and commissions. Maybe we will, maybe we won't win those spots, but that's a place to get in and start letting your values be seen and heard. And then you can move up from there. And when we start big, you know, I think that right now, I think that's just it's a tall order because we're fighting the money. I mean, look at the governor's race. Let's be honest. I love our candidates. They're in the race for governor. We've got three specific that I particularly am fond of in the governor's race. But are any of them going to have enough money to beat the Democratic machine in Colorado?
No, particularly if that machine is Michael Bennett, right?
Well, I mean, Michael Bennett just announced raising $1.7 million.
Right.
Our sneeze.
I think 10,000 right now.
Yeah, right.
We got 1,700, so we got them. We got them boxed in.
I love these guys, and I'm not trying to cast, you know, shadow on them because I love them and I want them to keep moving forward. I want us to have a candidate to vote for, and I pray for a great outcome. But we also must be realistic of the battle that we're up against. And rather than spreading ourselves too thin into these races that we know we cannot win in some of these congressional seats or these House districts, pool our resources into smaller spaces where we can take a foothold and then move up from there. That's something that we really strongly believe in the PAC. And something that I didn't mention is that we do have a Gen Z option. Now, it's not posted on our website anywhere. We would like our Gen Z activists to reach out to us personally, and we will offer you a discount code for those tickets, because we would like as many Gen Z participants as possible to be at this meeting to meet Mr. Gohmert. He's hilarious. He's got a wonderful sense of humor. He's just a really down-to-earth guy. He's just like us, and everybody's just going to love him.
Well, and he's got some experience in Texas kind of fighting, you know, for the soul of the party there, too, right? So he kind of understands a Colorado situation, too.
Absolutely. and he knows what's going on here. He's very aware of it. He put out a statement. He sent an email out to our followers last week. I hope everybody received that. If you didn't and you want to read it, reach out to us. We can forward that on to you. But he knows full well what we're up against here in Colorado, and he's on board to help us try to flip, you know, a seat or two and help us take back us anything that we can in this state for a positive turnaround.
Well, let me ask you this, with the vice chair race coming up. And I think, again, Colorado Politics had an article, which is somewhat true. And the article, it was an Ernest Lunding article, so it was fairly straightforward, I would, at least in my opinion. And he was talking about, you know, Richard Holtorf, the Rhino candidate. And then you got Mark Hampton. I know some people don't like it, but I agree with Mark Hampton. If you don't want to be called a Rhino, then don't be a Rhino. And then you got Mark Hampton, the grassroots candidate.
That the people who say we can't say rhino are rhinos.
Rhinos. Yeah. Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just like the racists calling us racist. They're racist.
Yeah.
Well, what your thoughts on I was talking to some people today, and I have a sense that they think it's going to be a close vote. And, you know, we can talk maybe later about Britta Horn, you know, just kind of making her own rules up as she goes. But that's kind of, I guess, how she rolls. But your thoughts on that? And how, I mean, some people say, well, it doesn't matter. The vice chair can't do anything. But Mark Hampton says, oh, no, I can be there. I can be our voice. I can be our eyes and ears. Your thoughts?
Well, we support Mark Hampton. And from the PAC's perspective, we have endorsed Mark Hampton in the race for the vice chair position. Regardless of whether or not he can or cannot do anything, what he can do is be our eyes and our ears for transparency and truth and honesty coming out of this leadership, because they are just a disaster. I sit on the executive committee, and I mean, we've had, you know, multiple meetings now in the course of a couple months, and every meeting, I mean, she doesn't even know how to lead a meeting. How can you be the chair of the state party when you don't even know how to lead a meeting?
Yeah.
I love Greg Carlson, our parliamentarian, but it isn't his job to lead the meeting. And that's what's happening, is he's leading the meeting.
Well, because it's his job to rig the meeting. which he did for the last vote. Okay, well, this wasn't a good vote.
Let's have another vote until we finally have
a good one. And that's good. Parliamentary procedure says you keep on voting till you get a good one.
Get the answer you want. Yeah, I think I've seen that somewhere before from the Democratic Party. It's very, very similar tactics. It's just terrible and evil what they're doing. And I mean, they're surrounded by people who do not know what they're doing. The budget is an absolute disaster. I think they ought to get their own house in order before they go out and try to spend $2.5 million of our donor money that we don't even have.
Exactly.
There's no room there for any money to go to candidates, because every dollar they're raising, if they raise any at all, is spent to pay their friends some kind of paycheck, including some kind of profit sharing. Who does profit sharing for temporary employees?
Yeah,
I work in the finance field. You do not give profit sharing to temporary employees. That's the stupidest idea I've ever
heard. Listen, I worked in the broadcast industry. You don't do that for full-time CEOs, you know.
I mean, and who wants to donate to that? That is just an absolute waste of our donor money. And, you know, they're still suffering from Dave derangement syndrome, and they're suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. When you combine the two of those, you just need to put them all in a padded room and throw away the key.
Yeah,
my
exactly.
Favorite one was when Richard Holtorf, who's is the establishment candidate running, on the Jeff and Bill show on 710, they asked him, well, how is the fundraising going? Because, you know, that's part of the whole selling point, is to have, well, let's get the country club Republicans back into the thing and they'll all contribute. And Holtorf said, that's a shameful question to ask, because, you know, she just got into office 4 months ago. And after he got off the phone, you know, some of the calls went, why is that a shameful question to ask how much they've raised? I mean, it's just amazing, I guess. And what they went from a monthly reporting to a, you know, semi-annual reporting. So, well, I guess we'll find out pretty soon what they raised for a while. But I have a feeling it's not an overwhelming number.
Well, no. Well, you know it's not. I mean, they have no turnout. They have no engagement. No one's interested. No one cares. Anyone who's donating any money is donating privately to the candidates, or you know, to smaller organizations, because they don't trust them. I mean, I'm not going to give money to people I don't trust.
Right.
And you know, it's just you know, and for all their fodder about Dave Williams, well, where is Dave Williams today? He's serving in the Trump administration, so they can take whatever they think that they want to say, but we always know that we're on the right side of history, and they're going to be stuck left holding the bag. And I can't wait to see what the end, the destruction of the party, unfortunately, at the end of this cycle with Britta Horn at the helm is just going to be sad.
Well, you know, I've joked about this, but I think it's partly true. Britta Horn is sitting up in McCoy, Colorado, on her farm table and just kind of sitting there making phone calls, dialing for dollars occasionally. But the party's almost disappeared. I mean, I've attended at least one, maybe more, of the executive committee meetings by phone because there's nothing but virtual committees.
Well, you can't when you've closed down the office. How are you supposed to have a meeting?
Yeah, well, the only office, right. Eli Bremer's office down in Colorado Springs, and that's, you know, the peak Republican's office, the only office, regional office of
well,
they've got.
The Republican's office was shut down by cease and desist by Dave Williams multiple times because they do not have the authority to use the Republican name in their organization, and they continue to do it. So there's that.
Yeah, well, exactly. they need somebody to pay their rent. So
well, and I go back and forth too, and that this is just my belief, and that this is not, it's not really a flaw, it's a feature of the system. I think that there are what I keep calling dark money donors who want to have jungle primaries in Colorado. And it's what you want to do in order to do that. I think Britta Horn's going to get, she's going to quietly kill the opt out. She's going to, there's going to, like you said, the party is disappearing. And I think that's in part on purpose because there's not going to be anybody to fight it. It's going to be like, you know, Barb Kirkmeyer will introduce another bill to get rid of the caucus and assembly system. And, you know, the donors will control everything. And we'll have to rely on.
Coming Saturday, we'll have another virtual meeting, which would be another virtual disaster.
Right.
And
right.
As I understand it, they're going to screw over the grassroots. The grassroots called for a meeting. For the opt-out, they said, okay, yeah, the meeting, but we're not going to vote on everything. And then we say we appeal it. Gregory will kind of, oh, you can't appeal it because this is an unappealable one.
And the
party is literally disappearing before our eyes
as
these virtual meeting after virtual meeting in which you really can't participate. I mean, you're sort of watching Britta ask her executive director, you know, what time of day is it?
Yeah.
Where am I? You know, Britta is not old enough to be senile, but she's doing a good imitation of it. I mean, okay, let's ask our Alec. What's the answer to that, Alec?
Yeah.
Alec, hey, Alec. If you just kind of, this is pathetic.
It is. It is. It's embarrassing. It's just embarrassing. You know, and I don't know, I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but I think you're right. And that is their agenda. And then you got Barb Kirkmeyer, who we know is going to jump into this governor's race, too. So, you know,
oh, please, please do, Barbara, with God.
Another one.
We'd love to have you in the race.
And watch how all of a sudden they will endorse pre-primary. Why?
Yes, yes, yes.
Barb Kirkmeyer,
you gotta mark your words. It's like all of a sudden that's okay. Hey, well, listen,
Colorado party does have very little to no chance to elect a governor, but if Barb Kirkmeyer is there, it goes from 0.05 to 0.0.
What a disaster. What a disaster. I mean, we'll have open borders and free health care and drug injection sites on the side. I mean, it'll be no different than if Brittany Pedersen was our governor. I mean, it'll be the same thing. You know, it's terrible. Yes. Just terrible. So.
Well, Laura, before we let you go, then one more time, because you've been great as always. Your event coming up and Team Imer, I think you guys are just doing great stuff. And I appreciate you guys so much once again for stepping up.
Yeah, Team Imer PAC.
Uh-oh, you froze. Oh, if you couldn't come back, Laurel, you froze. If not, guys... Okay, well, that's okay. Hey, Thomas, we can let her go because I know, Laura, if you come back if you can, but it was Team Imer PAC. That's where you can go to get the information. And it's on August 9th. Louie Gohmert is going to be there. And I think it's kind of cool. She's saying, you know, we're doing it not just in Colorado, but we're trying to, you know, make an impact elsewhere too. Wanted to switch over now and want to get your guys' thoughts. So if you want to call in, 888-627-6008. If you're on with us on Zoom, go ahead and unmute yourself or type it in the comments. Want to talk about this Epstein thing. I have a bunch of thoughts on this. And Chuck, here's what I want to say about it. And then we can kind of go from there. I think two things can be true at the same time. One, we can't, and I think both Trump needs to realize this, and we need to, the base needs to realize this. We can be thrilled about the stuff that Trump is doing and accomplishing. We can be thrilled about everybody getting fired at the DOJ. We can be thrilled about his wins at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court today said, hey, he can fire the, you know, start to get rid of the Department of Education. We can be happy about what he's doing in various places, and yet we can still say, but we want to know what's going on with the Epstein thing. And I think Trump needs to realize that, too, that look, this was, it's not so much about who's on the list or what's on the list, but there are questions about Epstein was clearly doing very bad things. He was getting away with it. All kinds of people and entities knew about it. And the question is, why? Who was involved? To what extent was that involvement? And the big question now is, and why all of a sudden are we supposed to just pretend that it's over? I mean, those are my thoughts on it. What do you think?
Well, you know, I don't think Trump realizes that he is in a unique position, that he actually has trust of the MAGA base. But MAGA isn't just what Trump says. Remember, mm-hmm. Trump 6 months ago, a year ago, would go to rallies and be sure to get your shot and get booze, get your COVID shot and get booze. And go, whoa, they're turning on me. You know, he inherited the Tea Party. And he learned by having rallies, you know, what things the base wanted and what didn't. And he really changed his mind. He had his own ideas on, I think, tariffs and trade and everything else, but a lot of the other ones, the pro-life position and so forth. And so he's built up an enormous trust, not that everybody believes him literally what he says, because he does have a tendency to not be literally correct. Mm-hmm. But on the bigger things, he trusts himself. He's thrown that all away for Epstein, all away. He had, you know, whatever they said, and I'm sure they said, oh, well, there's no problem. He killed himself and there's no charges. You know, that's not the question. What was he part of the CIA? And apparently right. He was. It was part of Mossad. Apparently he was. How did he get his money? Where did it come from? And what did he engage in? I mean, is the grand total of his sins is that he got some young women, recruited them to be quasi-prostitutes for some old men. I mean, that's not exactly new thing. And everything now that, you know, there are no prostitutes. The word prostitute is no longer allowed. It is a victim. All prostitutes are a victim. In some sense, a lot of prostitutes are victims, but they're always referred to as the victims. Like, hey, why don't you go have sex with that old guy and we'll give you a lot of money? Okay. And you go, oh, you're a victim.
I think
the idea and pedophilia, yeah, a lot of the prostitutes, victims are in their teens. Well, that is that new? Older guys and teenage women, is that new? But he could have just said, I'm not going to reveal it because I don't want to look at these poor guys' reputations ruined. Well, at least he told us the truth. I may not agree with it, but
here's
but
what I think exactly. And truth. I think I agree. And let me play now, because even on CNN, one of their analysts, David Urban, and he quoted Steve Bannon, I think, and he hit it on the head about, and I think Trump doesn't realize this, about why people are upset. So, Thomas, if we could please play the Epstein soundbite.
Urban, did you ever think that this would be a thing that would sort of break apart MAGA, whether it's temporary or not?
No, I mean, I don't think, and at the end of the day, I don't know if it's going to break apart MAGA, but the issue is bigger. Steve Bannon, I think, nails it here directly. It's really not about Jeffrey Epstein. It's about accountability. And I think the base, you heard Trump talk about this for a long time. There's a two-tier system of justice in America. And the elites get protected, and the FBI protects them, and the deep state protects them. And I think that's what the base is looking at here, the MAGA base is looking at. They want accountability for people who may or may not be on this list, who may be rich and powerful and famous. And that somehow the government, you know, writ large, is looking the other way. And they see large investigations on January 6th, on Russiagate, on the president, on these huge investigations that take years. And they think, why aren't we putting the same sort of resources in here when there is child sex abuse involved and very powerful people? And so that lends itself to not just, you know, the kind of fringe element saying this, but a lot of rational, reasonable people are asking, And why aren't we looking at this more deeply?
So after the president, during a cabinet meeting, got angry at a New York Post reporter for asking.
And I think we didn't need to hear more of her. This is from Charlene. Is Trump even writing his own posts, calling his base conspiracists? He's been co-opted by the neocon deep state, more arms to Ukraine than trying to gaslight us that NATO's paying for it. He's protecting himself and his family at this point. Don't blame him. You know, I'm not so sure that I buy that. I kind of agree with you, Chuck. I don't think Trump realized to people there was a bigger issue here. This is kind of what I think. When you look at the Epstein thing, I mean, I covered law enforcement for decades, right? And when you have a confidential informant, almost always confidential informants are criminals. That's why they're confidential informants in the first place, right? And you and I did a lot of work on the Scott Lee Kimball case where you had the FBI overlooking murder because Scott Lee Kimball was giving them information about drug deals, right? And so I think somehow, some way, Jeffrey Epstein just reminds me of he was somebody who was giving information to somebody. And because whoever it was valued that information, they allowed all of this sex trafficking stuff they just looked the other way, right? And in the meantime, he's bringing in a lot of money. You've got JP Morgan is involved. You've got all kinds of high profile people, celebrities, billionaires. Everybody knows something's rotten with Jeffrey Epstein, yet no one cares. No one does anything about it. You've got some of the women have testified in depositions that they had sex with other men. Well, who were those people? And I think the big thing is, and for Trump, I don't think he realizes that how it's perceived. I don't know if he's been co-opted or anything like that. I kind of think, well, let me just finish, Brian, on you. I kind of think that Tucker Carlson might be right, that if he was involved at all with Israel and Donald Trump is trying to negotiate this peace deal, the last thing he wants is something coming up that's going to mess up the Israeli thing. So he's trying to say it's going to go away. It's going to go away. And it's not working. He needs to do what you said, Chuck. He just needs to come up and say, here's why we've handled it the way we did. And Pam Bondi really screwed the pooch. She shouldn't have said all the stuff she did. But I think somewhere along the line to try to just sweep it away and tell us it's our imagination isn't working. Brian, what do you
think? Julie. Chuck, Julie, hey, Julie.
Yes.
I'm going to give you some Dr. Phil advice real quick, and then I'll talk about Epstein.
Okay.
So Rev loves you to death, but right now you're just a big fat dummy, so keep your mouth shut. He will come back around. Chuck gets a little, like leeway, so Rev will put up with him, but probably not you right now. Anyway, no. Is frickin' Captain Kangaroo on the list or Santa Claus? Is that the problem? Because this is going to hurt Trump big time. And it's not about, we know nobody's going to go to jail. We know that's not going to happen. My problem is, like, for example, when I found out that Paul Harvey talked shit about Rush Limbaugh, I didn't like Paul Harvey anymore. When I find out that Tom Hanks is a pervert, I'm not going to watch his movies. Tom, you name it. I have a right to know what kind of creep you are. I think you're a creep, even if the women were 21 years old. If you're 50, 60 years old, you're a freaking creep, and I'm not going to like you. I'll give somebody a lot of leeway if they're a good parent. Okay, you're an F-up, you do this, you do that. But if you're not going to protect kids, children, Little Women, this is a big deal because you guys let it happen. And you know what? They say, oh, we can't handle it because Jeffrey Epstein had lunch with somebody. No, we can separate that. Right. I want to know how much money Tom Hanks is paying that account, you know, to stay out of the whatever. That's what I want to know. And then I want to know names because I think we have a right to know. We don't like you if you're a creep. And yeah, we should have a little shame. We should be able to shun you. We don't give a damn how rich you are. I don't care.
Well, and Barney, you're kind of breaking it up. And that's, I kind of agree with that too, in terms of the names. It's like, particularly after Epstein had all the issues going on.
I don't care if Mitch McCart, they're creepers. They're not.
All right. Hey, Barney, we're losing you a little bit here. So we're going to let you go there. But I think that's true. It's kind of like, okay, I could see maybe initially before all this came to light, but why are these people, why was no one asking? Why was Bill Gates not asking, Jeffrey, where do you get your money? You know what I mean? You don't seem to have a job. Where do you get your money? Why was Bill Gates not saying, hey, I know you had this giant sex trafficking conviction in Florida. So maybe I shouldn't have lunch with you. If you're the U.S. attorney, and, you know, it's like, why are they not prosecuting him? Why is no one saying, the U.S. attorney said, well, I was told I couldn't touch him because he was foreign intelligence. Well, what does that mean? And why, what was he doing for foreign intelligence that made his crimes okay, right?
There's two issues. One of them is the blackmail, yeah. And then the other is the child exploitation. And the way I see it is they got an island, they brought in the ruling elite, and they're from every field. They're from politics, they're from, you know, IT, they're from tech, they're from entertainment, all the people that can shape the world. And they brought them in and they purposely blackmailed them. They may have even, filmed some things that the people were not doing things with children that they didn't even know they were children because they were drunk or drugged, right, or whatever. But the issue here is the blackmail as much as it is the sexual exploitation. And they used this blackmail to get those people on the list to implement their policies, guiding us toward a new world order. I mean, that's what they're doing with these people on the blackmail list. And if they say, no, I don't want to, I don't want to pass this law. Well, you know, we got this on you. Or no, I don't want to sing that song, the Diddy song, you know,
right,
about raping children. I don't want to sing those songs. Well, we got this on you. And it's convenient that at the same time, they dismissed the Diddy case because there were films of Diddy and feds talking together. And they practically dismissed all that. And Comey's daughter was working on both cases. So why they don't want it known. They don't want it known that there's a few people running this world. I mean, there really are a few people, and they do it through blackmail and extortion. And the people are puppets. Trump doesn't run anything. It's the puppets behind, it's the masters behind Trump, and then it's the bankers behind the masters. And that's who's running the show, and they are not ready for us to know that. They are not ready for us to know that our elections are not real. They're not ready for us.
And you know, Charlene, you raise a point, because again, I've covered, and it's in its essence, a lot of this is kind of like your basic criminal case, right? And so you have, I find it really interesting that Chase and JP Morgan, right? Ended up getting sued. They were paying $1.2 million from Epstein to the girls. So whenever before so I'm a prostitute and the man is paying me, whenever before has the bank gotten involved, right? When have they ever sued the bank and said, well, bank, you should have known that, you know, Julie was using her ATM card. I mean, why is when you talk about the financing, why is the bank involved in this?
Right. And Ghislaine Maxwell is the daughter of the Mossad agent.
Right.
Maxwell. I mean, this is they've had this set up for a long, and Tucker Carlson is 100% on target. And how you know that Tucker is on target is when Ben Shapiro comes out against him, and when that stupid Mark Levin comes out against him, and when Laura Loomer comes out against him, because I believe they're also agents, and they are here to influence us. Social influencers are also agents. And so we're really, Trump should have just said, this is bigger than I realized. I cannot tell you what all's going on, but just trust me, we're going to figure it out. They could have put it off another year. They've been dragging this out for a year, 6 months already. Trump could have just said, we're working on that. They did not have to expose that. They did not have to say one word.
I agree with you. Absolutely, Charlene. And I think he should do that now. He should come out and he could say, okay, this is bigger. There are more tentacles here. There is more. I did not realize this.
Exactly. But the reason they did it now. I think they did it now because Bebe came to town. It's disastrous when Bebe comes to town. Awful things happen. This is his third time here. He doesn't stay 2 days like other heads of state. He stays a week or longer. And so he came to town and he said, you know what? This Epstein list is making me nervous. You're going to have to come out and say there's nothing to it, or we're not going to go any further with any of these
people. I agree.
And that's the leverage. That's what he got out of Trump. And Trump did a 180 in midair, and he expects his base to buy it. And and that's where he made a mistake. And he should have just said, you know, they should have, when the leak was made, that he should have said, we're not going to talk about that right now. But I think he was pressured into saying, we're going to give these guys a sigh of relief. Because, see, there's only one person that wants to use that blackmail list. And that's Mossad. They don't want America using it. You see what I'm saying?
No, I think and Mike Benz had a great thing talking about tying Jeffrey Epstein back in the 80s to the Iran-Contra stuff, right? I mean, so he's been kind of bundling stuff behind the scenes for decades. And what did Glenn Greenwald on Tucker Carlson was talking about, the biggest purchaser, if you will, of American intelligence information is Mossad, like by far. Right.
And even Epstein, he lived in Israel after he was charged with all those sexual crimes in Florida. And then he got rid of assets, and then he came back to the United States. And then he had this, you know, little conviction that didn't amount to much. Right. And so anyway, he's been their number one point man. And so I don't think Trump was on the list. And but they don't care about the list being exposed so much as that there is a blackmail going on.
And you're right. I think what they don't want exposed is exactly what you said at the beginning, Charlene, is how they worked it. That's what they don't want. They don't want to expose who was looking the other way, why they were looking the other way, where ultimately was all of this going, right? That they just, they don't care about the list, because even as Barney said, you could say, look, this guy just had lunch with him. But there are so many questions, and I hope Trump does another 180 as soon as he gets this Iran-Israel thing worked out and says, okay, now I'm going to go ahead. Because I don't think, I agree with you, Chuck, I don't think it's going to go away for him. I think people are going to say, you guys are covering something up. And again, there's this two-tier system of justice, and, you know, we want some answers.
Is it really worth, whatever it is, whatever the big secret is, worth the credibility of Trump, worth the credibility of the Attorney General, worth the credibility of the FBI? Is it worth it? And the answer is, I doubt it.
Right. But see, they know that we don't have
to go, you know, never mind. We're actually going to tell you, you want to see the files? Great. I mean, at worst, it sounds like a high rent prostitution scheme. You know, I mean, okay, is that and you know, the child thing? I don't know how they get child to it. I guess maybe on a computer you had child porn, but apparently any girl there was legal, barely legal, as they say, 17 or 18.
But most
prostitutes aren't 18, aren't 39 or 58, or, you know, they're school teachers molesting young boys or something.
Well, I think it had to be children, or the blackmail wouldn't have worked. I think it bring children there, or the blackmail wouldn't have worked, because and they got them in compromising situations, and they may not have even known they were being in those, because they may have been.
And they just don't want us, Charlene, like you said, they don't want us knowing that that's how they roll, right? And they don't want us knowing that. And also, it's to a certain extent, and we've seen this, I've seen this happen before with confidential informants. They're out there committing crimes, even in Colorado, murder, right? And the FBI doesn't care. And then they get caught, and then it's really embarrassing for everybody. And then they try to cover up that they had anything to do with it.
Then they try to gaslight you, and then they go, oh, look, we got this guy importing fentanyl. Well, the people that are running the fentanyl rings are way up there on the list. They're the ones that are allowing it to happen. And so we think we've got an arrest, you know, some low-level guy that can be replaced.
Right.
With another low-level
guy. Charlene, great comments. I agree with you. I think it's not going to go away. Thank you. Chuck, anything else on that you want to say? I mean, I think we're going to keep I think it goes to sort of the crux of, in part, why Trump is. And I think, you again, but things can be more than one thing can be true. I think you can look at Pam Bondi getting rid of all the DOJ people. You can look at all of those sobbing, whatever, the State Department people. I read they were like, they added 23,000 jobs in the past 2 years and they get rid of 1,300 low-level ones. And you'd think the world was going to end, right? It's like, they're ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the two aren't the same. One is what's your credibility? And that doesn't change from the fact you've done a lot of good things. But that doesn't change the fact that you said, okay, we're going to reveal what the Jeffrey Epstein thing is. And then you go far, you hand out binders and you say, the list is on your table. And then you end up going, you know, all of that was just a bit of exaggeration, a bit of puffery. And so forget about that. And we'll just move on. Everybody move on.
We've got Sherry from Lakewood calling in. Hey, Sherry, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling again.
So a couple things along the conversation that you were having with Charlene. I understand Chuck's feelings as far as, like, Elvis Presley fell in love with a 14-year-old. Yeah. And apparently they never had sex until she was 18. I get that. But many of us think that's what the issue is. And even if they are young girls, I love that lady that you played where she's talking about a two-tier system.
Right,
because whose
right.
young girls are they? They're poor people's young girls. They're trailer trash kids. They're single parent people that can't stay on top of their kids that they were picking up and talking them. Kids that had been abused in their youth. Those were the kids that they were getting for the Wexner's modeling. There's a whole thing that was feeding people in to Epstein. And so these are just, you know, your regular poor people that maybe can have a hard time keeping their family together. A tragedy happens. There's no justice for them because nobody seems to care who is raping their children or whatever is happening. Nobody seems to care about that. So, and the Bondi, she didn't say teenagers or young women. She said children. She said there's videos, tens of thousands of videos of children with such awful stuff. And so that's where I'm having a really big problem always have, because who goes to war? How many of the senators and how many of the presidents, how many of their kids get killed in the wars? So it's kind of always the same story. Whose kids get sacrificed? Whose kids are going over to Epstein's Island? So it is really a two-tier system.
Oh, that's a good point. And they are. I mean, that's the way it works, right? They pick on vulnerable kids, and the kids are vulnerable for, like you said, they're vulnerable for a lot of reasons. And it is two tiers. And you're right. And that's why it's so outrageous, because the people who were supposed to be looking out for those kids, so to speak, clearly were not. And then that's what I think want to know the answer to. Well, why not? Right? Why did they sacrifice these kids, and who ordered that, and how come all these years later they're still covering it up?
Well, Pam Bondi's one. She said he had child pornography on his computer. That's not the women they had down at in Pedo Island. That was just his personal pornography stash.
Well, they said it wasn't clear, though. I mean, this is what we don't know. Was this just downloaded child pornography, which, of course, is somewhat moot because somewhere there was a child being abused? Or did he produce it? That we don't know.
But we won't know anything, because we do have a two-tier justice system. We do have one that's, you know, for the insiders and the, you know, the press and everyone else, and another for all the rest of us. And we're not going to find out, I don't think. And I think Trump has really hurt himself, and he'll partially recover, but he won't totally recover by just shoving it under the rug, saying, I'm doing all this good stuff. Let's not worry about this one, which is totally crooked.
Hey, Sherry, thank you for your call. We appreciate your comments.
Thanks. Thank you.
As always, yeah. And then Charlene says, exactly, Sherry, the ruling elite have us in a matrix. Bondi is gaslighting so bad. She told her made on video there were no children involved, or there, that there were children involved. So, hey, on a good news note, though, Pam Bondi is doing something good. Now we'll have to see what comes of this, but the FBI apparently has opened a probe into like the weaponization of the DOJ and the FBI. And then also, I think this is fun. They're also kind of getting to the bottom of the auto pen thing, the New York Times. And you kind of wonder why the New York Times is turning on Joe Biden so much now, but they are. And essentially talked to people and they found out that Biden actually had like no idea what, you know, that who was on the list for the auto pen pardons. What was, I mean, they would change it. They would do this. I mean, somebody somewhere, I mean, as aides, I guess, were just putting down writing
stuff.
You know,
Joe's basic view was, let's do that.
Well, I don't even think he knew, right? I guess he knew about hunters, but it was like,
oh, Hunter, yeah, let me sign that one. All the other ones, I don't care.
Before, at least, they were trying to gaslight us into that he was at least somewhat aware and he was just too busy to sign it. Now they're like, they didn't even bother running it by him, basically, is what they're saying.
Why would you? You know, he's going to go, yeah, why are you bothering me? Let me sleep.
They were just saving time. But it does raise a question. Are they then legitimate? I mean, one could argue no. And so Rand Paul is saying, okay, so he's going to reintroduce his criminal referral for Anthony Fauci for lying to Congress.
Well, he's going to bring Fauci up and ask him again, did you do any research? And he's going to go, oh, that's a definitional problem.
We could also go after Liz Cheney. I forget what they cleared her of, but we could go for the January 6th.
If anybody deserves to be I know. Crucified, it's Liz
Definitely
Cheney.
They should, because I don't even think the Democrats would get all that upset. They'd be like, oh, yeah, we didn't mean it. There was some intern put her name on the list, and so they did that. But what do you make of that? Do you think that's going to go anywhere?
No.
No,
I think you got Joe saying, yeah, I proved it. Yeah, well, nah.
Well, apparently they kind of determined that, no, Joe isn't actually saying that. I mean,
Joe will say that.
Oh, he will say that.
They'll get him to say, Joe, did you approve Joe Schmo? Oh, I love Joe Schmo. I
yeah.
That crackhead, yeah.
I formally approve that. It's the whole thing. Again, from Charlene, auto pen special prosecutors are all diversions. Are all diversions to make us forget we are a nation run by ruling elite and not the people. Well, that's true. But there again, Charlene, too, I'll also say here again, two things can be true at once. We can look at those things and say, man, we need to remember the other. We need to always remember the other and not lose sight of sort of the big picture. But I think it is, these things are all kind of pieces. And it is at least encouraging that one little piece of the matrix has crumbled. Now, granted, there's like billions more. The Education Department, Trump being allowed to go ahead with mass firings at the Education Department.
And I feel sorry for these people. They got a hold of these worthless jobs because they knew somebody. And they've been not working for 20, 30, God knows how many years. And then they got COVID. And so, you know, they didn't have to work. I'm sure they already were working and say, hey, well, as they say, we're in the field. We're in the field right now. And the field is their lawn. And then they don't have to do any work. They don't even have to show up to work. And now they're getting fired. That's not fair.
Because where are they going to get a job like that?
Yeah. Why can't the golden parachute go to these poor people? They're not the super rich. They're just your standard garden variety bureaucrat who got this great deal, and now they're taking it away from them. That's not fair.
Well, that's why they're crying and whining, you know, and they show them all marching and resist fascism. It's like, you should fire that person too. So there is, in some of that, there although we need to keep our eye on things, and Charlene had a good point. You can kind of tell by who's attacking who, where things are coming from. And I am somewhat suspicious about why the New York Times is putting this out, because you'd think they would be running cover. So I'm not sure why, where that's, I mean, not for a
Maybe
second
just
do
an
I think
honest
it's
mistake.
Journal-
and the honest mistake, they did a real article. And you know, they're going to, Who authorized this? This is a real article. I mean,
that person will get fired or something. It's like, we don't do real journalism here. So
yeah, well, how'd that get through?
Hey, that is going to wrap it up for us on this Monday. We're still working on Wednesday's show, so I don't know what to promo there, but between now and then, I'm sure something will happen. So thank you to everybody on Zoom. Thank you to Laurel Eimer. Remember, you can go to the Team Eimer pack to get information about her event if you're interested in that. And otherwise, we will see everybody
oh,
later.
Oh, no, well, 30 seconds more, 30-second sure. edition. The report on Rev, because we had avoided.
Oh, okay.
So we went to San Diego. These were the world's greatest golfers, 14-year-old golfers. I mean, this is a tournament won by Tiger and Phil Mickelson and Ernie Els. And Rev struggled for the first 2 days. But on the back nine of the third day, he got his form back and was one under. And he was playing great, great golf. Now, of course, the key is playing great golf, 54 holes, not just nine holes. But we go down next week to Miami, to Trump's Doral. Blue Monster Course, where we'll take on the world's greatest again see how he does this time.
And if we see Trump, we're talking about this whole Epstein thing too. So
that's right.
In the meantime, though, we will see you all on Wednesday. Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody.